Business Breakthrough Thursdays is a podcast for business owners, not just any business owner, but leaders who are not satisfied with their current levels of growth, productivity, or profitability. Leaders who are dedicated to taking their business to the next level. Leaders who want to break through. In this podcast, we'll interview breakthrough business owners, innovative CEOs, and thought leaders. People who are creating change for their businesses, their industry, and their community. Each episode will give you actionable ideas and strategies to help create your own breakthrough business. Please welcome your host, David Fionda.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Business Breakthrough Thursdays. This is episode 4, Most Common Messaging Mistakes with Doug Fox. Doug is someone I've known for a few years through our affiliation as both mentors with the Mass Challenge. Doug is also working on a course about for us for the fall on creating a brand that connects and converts. Doug is a passionate brand champion and motivating coach. He's a proven brand and marketing strategist with 20 plus years experience in successfully helping businesses better connect and convert new customers. He's especially adept at taking very complex offerings and simplifying them down to what is most compelling and motivating for prospects. Doug, welcome.
Awesome. Thank you.
So, Doug, what we're talking about is a brand, and all companies have some kind of brand, right? You know, I mean, you think about the big companies like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or anything. In your mind, how do you define a brand?
So a brand is an audience perception or what a company means to them. Now, all the work you do in brand management is trying to adjust that to what you want as a company, to what's going to move your business and brand further the most. But ultimately, the brand is in the mind of the audience. And there's normally a gap between what you want it to be and what the audience thinks it is. And that is where you do the work of trying to position and reposition to get it to where it will help you the most.
Tell me a little bit about some great brands that you kind of look at or that are important to you. Like, what are some really great brands that you've seen in your career?
So, I mean, all brands, you know, we get to know them by the problems they solve for us. So, you know, I think it's really important if you have a brand that has done a very successful job solving something that really mattered to you. You know, if I think of something that helps my business all the time on a regular basis, I use an app called Calendly that I had a real problem, which a lot of us do the dance of how are we going to schedule, right? You know, like, are you available this day? Are you available that day? And there's all this wasted time. And Calendly, and there's quite a few out there, but it has a very easy to use app that I say, go there and schedule something. And they look at my available time, they book it, the Zoom's already dropped in, just makes it easier for everyone involved. So that's an example of a brand that I have a connection to. And although there's a bunch of other companies that can do the same thing, I stay loyal to them because they solve that problem to me and they've done a good job of solving it.
And how do they position themselves? What's their message?
I actually have no idea.
No kidding. But they solve the problem for you. And that's the biggest part about
solving the problem. And that's, you know, really a positioning is about understanding the needs of the audience, understanding the problem they have, understanding the strengths that you have as an organization in order to solve that problem, and understanding what competitors are currently messaging and known for. And you're basically trying to find that white space or that open space in order to grab what matters to the audience that you can deliver on that's different than competitors.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, a lot of the work that I've done with companies, you know, I ask them who they compete with, and one of their first responses always, no, right? Well, there's always competition, right?
And yeah, you know,
it's how you position your company, as you said, against your competitors so that you stand out. How has, in the face of kind of things going on today in the economy, how has branding changed, in your opinion?
Yeah, if you're talking specifically about this year and the complete cluster of everything, and I mean, the list of things that have gone wrong or challenging us personally and professionally are so great this year. I think all of us as marketers have a very difficult time breaking through the noise. And this year, there is more noise than ever. Like, people's hair is on fire literally every day. So what my advice to marketers is you need to be more direct than ever. This is not the time to pussyfoot around, because if you are not addressing something that's a really important problem to them, they are just going to ignore it. So, like, this is not the time, you know, I mean, or you can, you know, you could go for just pure brand right now and just try to, like, get goodwill with them. But if you're like most companies and you need to not only be building brand, but actually selling product, then you gotta be very direct about, this is the problem we're going to solve for you. This is how we're different from competitors. You know, just cut right to the chase.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, so many businesses are worried about survival.
There's a lot of pain, right? So, I mean, that in many ways, if you do a good job of solving someone's pain, you know, that's, and you deliver good value for what they're going to spend, you're going to, this business to be had.
Let's talk about, you know, you've come up with a great list of the top five positioning messaging mistakes and how to avoid them. So what's the first one?
Yeah. So just as a preface to this, I always like to cite someone who was very influential to me earlier in my career, a creative director by the name of Steve Lynch, that had a saying. It's a bit sacrilegious, but I still carry it to this day, that if the 10 commandments had been the 10 things to do, nobody would have read them. So there is something helpful about the five mistakes to avoid that, like, we might be busy, our hair's on fire, but we could all make time to avoid the five mistakes, right? So that's, I'm going to use that to tee up my five common mistakes.
Well,
so the first one
means getting business or not getting business, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Man. So the most common mistake people have is, and I'm going to tee this up also with a visual. So if you can close your eyes and you picture in front of you a bed of nails, and there's a bunch of different nails, and each one of those nails is a message you're putting out there in the market. You know, you might have multiple audiences, you might have multiple products, you have multiple people that say something's important. But when you put that multitude of messages out there in the market, and you're trying to penetrate a big meaty market, and imagine a big phone book being held up above that bed of nails, and then you drop that phone book, all you're ever going to do is skim the surface of the market. The very tips of the nails may be poking a little bit, but you're never going to get deep penetration. But if you instead construct a single, very sharp nail that addresses a prioritized audience, deep pain, want, needs, desire, aka problem, boom, it'll fire all the way through that phone book. That is how you penetrate the market deeply, efficiently, and effectively. And that is because sharp positions and messages penetrate and multi-point ones do not. And ultimately, what it comes down to is companies always want to try to be all things to all people. I refer to it as the Lionel Hutz of marketing. If you remember The Simpsons, Lionel Hutz was the lawyer that also did shoe repair, and he also did daycare. And, like, I feel like they were trying to, like, cover all the bases of all the business you could be doing. And unfortunately, when you do that, much like Lionel Hutz, you become kind of like the Chinese food restaurant that says they have amazing Mexican food. You wonder if either of them are very good, and you actually probably wonder if you're going to leave there with food poisoning. So he immediately lowers the quality. And the reality is, when you try to speak to all those audiences equally, you're going to reach none of them. So you got to do the hard work of prioritizing your audiences, which audiences are most important, and then prioritize the message for the audience that matters most, you know?
I used to say that, you know, companies sometimes are an inch wide, an inch deep, and a mile wide.
Terrible.
What you want to do is be a mile deep and an inch wide.
Yes. And just keep driving deeper into the market. And the way that you do that, actually, your message construction has to do that. Because a lot of times people will build like a message map, and they might decide on what the one message that's most important. But then the three other messages that didn't win, those are the next messages. So you end up with four messages. But instead, what you want to think of is, what's the one thing that gets more of the audience to lean in and want to learn more? And then once they're interested and want to learn more, what is the most important evidence for those people to believe you can do that one thing? That you use to construct the pillars. So you connect with the position and you convert with the three supporting messages. Connect and convert with your message rather than spreading really wide. You're putting all that energy behind the nail to drive deep and deep and deep into the market.
What are the three pillars? Tell me a little bit about that.
So the three pillars are actually mapped to what matters most to the audience. So say, for example, you're a company and your positioning is that you drive superior speed for them. Well, what are the questions someone has when you claim superior speed? For example, they might say, how are you able to go so fast? Who have you done this for? Where can I get it? Whatever those boxes are that they naturally have in their head, that is the support points. So once again, you got them leaning in that you offer speed, and then you're helping them check the boxes so they convert into a qualified leader customer.
Well, being 6'7" and a former offensive lineman, speed is not speed is never one of my.
But you're always special sauce. So there you go. So teeing up special sauce is actually a great way to lead to my second most common mistake, which is not sounding different. Because ultimately, prospects want to know what you're replacing. But the way they know that it's going to be worth their while to replace is that you're doing something different or better than they're currently doing it. And if you aren't different than what they have, why are they going to switch? If you say the same thing and you say you have the same process, the only way they would ever switch is if their current method is completely broken. But that's such a small subsegment of the market that's all you're competing for. You're never going to get any growth. You're never going to get any scale doing it that way.
What happens if, you know, the rare occasion that you're not replacing something, or are you always replacing something?
Well, you're always replacing something. And actually, I kind of wanted to touch on this when you were talking about competitors earlier. It's for a lot of companies, the competitor is not an actual competitor. The competitor is inertia for the current method or doing nothing.
Right?
You're trying to get someone off doing nothing. So you want to kind of think of what are the strengths of do nothing and what are the weaknesses and play up the weaknesses to your strengths. But that's very common, you know, especially with a lot of the emerging companies that you and I work with, Dave. The emerging companies, they'll search the internet and they'll find a few companies that do what they do. But unless the people that are looking to solve that problem are doing the same search and comparing you to those other companies, those aren't your competitors. Your competitors is doing nothing or doing things the same way they've always done them.
One of the things I do currently, besides hosting this podcast, I sell accounting software, and we lose to do nothing a lot.
Of course, right?
A lot, because
paper, Excel, right? I guess doing nothing is Excel, probably, right?
QuickBooks, right? We do QuickBooks, right? So one of the challenges is, you know, we've got to build the case about why they need to do something differently, but a lot of times it's do nothing, and that's problematic.
I think another point I want to make on being different is you need to be different. But you also need to make sure that what you're claiming is credible in the minds of the audience. Because a lot of times I find companies try to push the needle so much to be different that the audience thinks you're trying to sell them a bridge. And if that's the case, you are going to be ignored and you never get the opportunity to engage. So for some of the companies that you and I know are lucky enough to work with, people doing really innovative stuff, sometimes I tell them you actually have to dial back your claims a little bit. Because if people don't believe you can do it, even if you can do it, you never get the chance to engage. So I always say, relevant to the needs of the audience, credible, and then different.
And different. Relevant, credible, and different. One of the other common mistakes they made.
So a big mistake, and I think you said the word a little earlier, but it's too much jargon. You know, we all talk in too much jargon. I do it as a marketer, like probably on this. You probably, when I listen to this later, I'm going to find some words I said, why did I say that? You know, you got to use the real words. And the reality is we live and breathe our industry every day. We're so deep in it. But you know what? The people you're selling to, they aren't. They're living lots of different things. And probably their core business might be something different. So what you risk of doing when you put jargon and things into it is you talk above their heads, and then you lose them. You don't sound like you can actually help them. So I say cut down on jargon, cut down on acronyms, right? What do tech and medical people love to do? They love to create acronyms. So if you ask your audience what acronym they would ever like to have, the only acronym they'd ever like to have is NAA, not another acronym. We all like to create acronyms, but the reality is that it's just something that people have to look up. People can misconstrue.
Right.
You know, it creates a lot of wasted time. So cut down the jargon, cut down the acronyms, and use the real language that your audience uses. And a wonderful way to think of this is a lot of times, you know, I'll ask customers, describe what your company does to a prospective customer. And they give a description. And then I say, now you're at a cocktail party with your neighbor who's an auto mechanic. How do you describe it for them? And believe it or not, the message that's closer to what you should be using for your prospect is closer to what you say to the person who is not in your industry.
No kidding.
You strip the jargon out, you simplify it down, use the language they use, and that way they make it very clear that you can actually help them in their problem.
Yeah, IBM always talked about TLAs, three-letter acronyms.
Yeah, it's a good brand strategy. I mean, I prefer the branded house where there's one brand. IBM does a good job of everything is IBM and then the acronym for that category. But you don't create a new acronym. If the acronym already exists and the customers are searching for it, then it's your brand with them. But a lot of people, they want to create a new one. They create a new acronym.
I look at company names, and you and I know a great example of this, right? But you know, a lot of people have, you know, their company name is around their URL. And some of these URLs, sometimes I go, you know, they're too technical, but they don't make any sense. They don't. I know it's hard because all the .coms are taken. Any .com name that has any kind of value at all is going to be like big bucks. So, I get that.
But it can be done. It can be done. Like, that's it's a bit of a cop-out that, like, the URL should drive the name. The name is really important, you know? Exactly. I mean, it's worth spending the time to come up with a good name. And to me, if you do combinations of descriptive and connotative words, you can combine them into something that makes sense to people and that you can still get the URL.
Yeah. Like a lot of people we talked about are, you know, doing get this. A lot of people.
Yeah, that's better, to be honest.
It is. At least it's kind of
intuitive. Yeah.
You know, and you look at like, you know, look at Zoom, the technology you're using now. Zoom was taken. So they did Zoom.us. Now, you know, they spent a whack load of money to be able to promote this, but. All right, so we've talked a little bit about jargon and keeping away from technical terms. And what's another common mistake people make with their positioning messages?
So the fourth most common mistake is ignoring emotion. And, you know, I work with a lot of B2B technology and medical people. And a lot of times people tell me, you know, these are very serious people. They're not emotional. They're very rational. And that is just the biggest piece of hogwash. Because the reality is, all of us, whether we're buying a $2 pack of gum or $1 million piece of equipment for a business, we all make decisions emotionally and justify them rationally. Whether we're a doctor, whether we're an engineer, whether we're an accountant, we all have emotional stress and pains. And the more you can connect on an emotional pain and offer up an emotional benefit credibly to the audience, that will give you more time to then sell the rational benefits, because someone, if you're going to understand my emotional need, then it would be great if you could also solve my rational needs. So interest in the emotion and then justify the decision rationally. To me, the emotional fear there is buying the wrong thing and being disappointed. So to me, that is an emotion that if someone could tap into, if you feel this company reduces the fear you're going to make the wrong choice, then you're going to spend more time checking the rational boxes to align their solution to actually end up buying it.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point because you're right. You're right. You know, as somebody who is, as small business people, these choices are huge. They have a huge impact. I can't tell you the number of people who say, geez, I bought the wrong phone system.
Some of these decisions at companies, you could lose your job. Like, I'm working with a company right now selling into pharmaceutical companies doing clinical trials. And you know what? If you're in charge of the clinical trial for their, you know, their cutting edge breakthrough, you know, oncology drug, and you make a mistake on the clinical trial and it gets delayed for 2 years and the CEO's got to tell the investors, like you can lose your job. Like, so guess what? There's a lot of emotional pain and fear for that person doing that job. And another side benefit of emotion is when someone buys with emotion, you have more loyalty from them. Oh, okay. Because when you made an emotional connection, when some competitor comes along, you're less likely to look. There's a greater obstacle to the competition when a brand makes an emotional connection with the audience. And I talk about HubSpot, and I'll probably get killed for this because a lot of people will be in the Boston market. People love HubSpot. But HubSpot still, the reality is best for an emerging company. And some of these companies outgrow HubSpot and they should be switching to our Marketo or some other platform. But the person who's the head of marketing and maybe even the CEO have this emotional attachment to HubSpot because it was there for them when they were scaling from 1 to 10 to 100 to 500. So they stay and that creates obstacles that, you know, I mean, I tell you, it's irrational. It's emotional. But guess what? You want to be the one that leverages the emotional and benefits from the irrational.
Our listeners understand now the big four, but I like the fifth one because I think that, you know, we can talk about confusing people with a whole bunch of stuff, you know, gibberish. And then, you know, secondly, you know, got to be different. Don't make things too technical. Go through, but and not be a notion. But I really like the last one because I think that today it's even more important because we have a short amount of time to make the right decision. And, you know, so many companies are on the precipice of, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day that owns a hair salon and, you know, they're struggling because people aren't coming back and, you know, they're trying to make decisions. So, yeah, well, look at me, right? Yeah, look at me, right? Same thing, right?
I have my wife cutting my hair right now.
COVID hair, right? Yeah. But, so talk to me about the fifth really big.
So the fifth one is ignoring the why, right? You know, I think companies kind of start with talking about what they do, right? And that's like, you know, that's good. That gives them kind of the frame of reference of kind of what you're going to replace. And then hopefully, if they've paid attention to my earlier mistake, they've talked about how they're different. But ultimately, people want to know why it matters. What is it going to do? And specifically, all people, when they're looking at some sort of solution, they want to know what is the problem this is going to solve for me. People come to know brands by the problem they solve. And the more you can focus on a problem that hurts the most, the more there will be attachment. Now, how do you get to the why? At the very least, it's about talking about the benefits. And a lot of times, people want to talk about the features. They talk about their great expertise. Well, great, you have expertise. But what's the benefit of that expertise? Maybe that means you're in good hands. Maybe there's peace of mind. Maybe you're going to get better insights to navigate through. But you need to talk about the benefits they're going to get. And I always say, you ask this question over and over again. So what does that mean for the audience? So what does that mean for the audience? So what does that mean for the audience? And eventually you get to the end where you can't answer it anymore. And that's where you know you've really delivered on the why. And the reality is, if you make them have to figure out and guess what the why is, they're not going to buy from you. So you really got to spell it out. Spell. Why it matters. This is the benefit. What you do, how you do it different, why it matters, short, succinct. That is the hook that pulls people in, that turns them from a prospect into a customer.
Give me an example of a company that does a great job with that.
I mean, this, the basics of why is really just focusing on the benefits. I mean, I tell you, any one of my customers, because I make sure that it's going to deliver on the benefits. But I tell you, there are companies that take the why a step further. And I highly recommend, if anyone hasn't watched it, the Simon Sinek TED Talk, The Power of Why, where he talks about, you know, that talks about a higher level why. And an example of a higher level why, and once again, you can't manufacture it. Like, the higher level why has to be there. But if it is, the higher level why is what can really be motivating to an audience. And I think a great example is Zipcar. So Zipcar was going into the rental car space. So rental car space, bunch of existing competitors, Hertz, Avis, Enterprise, all of them. So what did they do? So they were rental, but they were car sharing. Now, car sharing is a little different, right? You know, that you're not, maybe you're not renting it for a day, maybe you just take it for an hour. How did they do it different? They did a technology-enabled experience. So I can look on my phone, there's a car nearby. Oh, I can unlock it with my phone. I can drive with my phone. The phone tells me where to drop it off. So really great member experience. And if you compare that to traditional rent-a-car companies, where you have these contracts and you got to go to a desk and go to like they just made it so much easier. But the why for them that they hammered from the very beginning is there's too many cars on the road. Take the cars off the road. Why are you going to own a car when you drive it 8 hours a week and you don't need it the rest of the time? It's just clogging up driveways. It's clogging up garages. It's clogging up roads. And that really, really connected with an audience where there's a whole group of people now in their 30s that have no interest in owning a car.
Right.
And if you think about our generation, Dave, like when, you know, a lot of us wanted one in high school, but when you got your first job out of college, you got the most expensive car you could get because it showed you arrived. And now there's like,
what was your first car?
So I waited a while. I lived in New York City. So I waited. My first car that I bought myself was a Mazda 3. Mazda 3 coupe.
My first car, I was too young to drive it yet. My grandfather, when he passed away, had a 67 Sedan DeVille Cadillac. And that car, my brother and I would sit in the car and drive back and forth in the driveway. Couldn't get on the road, right?
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, the minute I turned 16 and a half, I got my license and I already bought a car. Now it's totally different.
Kids don't care, you know, and it's really changed for the car companies. Yeah, car companies used to get all these people graduating high school, graduating college, and now a lot of them don't want cars. And instead, the car companies, to react to that, they started creating their own car sharing services because they realized so much of their fleet now was going to car share that they felt they had to compete there. Well, guess what? That's not what they do. They're not good at that. They're struggling there. But it has totally changed a whole generation. And you think about it, which car do you want to rent from? The one doing car sharing? The one with the amazing member experience? Or the one that is taking cars off the road and making a world a better place for all of us. So that's an example of a higher level why. Now, I will take that one step further. You and I probably see a lot of emerging companies now where they're so obsessed with coming up with the why that they lead with the why. You know, we're changing the world of finance or whatever. Like, and it's, I refer to those as mayo sandwiches because there's no meat. You got to have the meat. You also have to have the what and how you're doing it different in addition to that. You got to have some meat. You got to have something. And if you're a vegetarian, maybe it's a portobello mushroom or some sauteed carrots or whatever. But without the meat, it's completely unsatisfying. So if you're going to have the why, you still also have to have the what and the how.
Well, Doug, this has been very, very, very informative. I really appreciate you coming on. It's been great. You know, we talked about why brands are important in companies. Big and small, you know, it doesn't, you know, do you have to be a huge corporation to have a brand?
No, you have a brand already. If you're not managing it, then what does it mean? And is it really moving your business forward? I mean, that's the matter. Like that, if you've ever spoken to anyone about what you're doing, you have a brand. If you have any customers, you have a brand. Right. What do they think about you? Right. What is the problem you solve? Like, do they think you're innovative? You know, do they think they get good value? All of those things is your brand already. Actively brand management is instead managing that of what you want it to be. That's going to help you sell more and make a better connection with your audience.
Yeah. So, you know, just to dispel one of the kind of myths, everybody needs a brand. Small companies, big companies, you know, everybody does, right? And you talked about today and did a great, just some great informative things. I learned a lot today, Doug, so thank you. But, you know, first of all, you know, don't be a mile wide and an inch deep. Yep. Be an inch wide and a mile deep. You know,
sharpen that focus. Make that sharp nail to go into the market.
Don't have too many messages to confuse people. Yep. You know, secondly, be relevant, credible, and different. You know, be different. Be unique. Yep. Don't be the same. We do everything this guy does, except it's cheaper. That's not going to sell. What's going to sell is being different, right?
Yep.
Avoiding the three-letter acronyms and the technical jargon. Oh. I love your analogy of, you know, if you're going to explain your company to your mechanic,
yes,
how would you do it, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've had to do a lot in my career is to try to explain complex financial. And my job is, you know, teaching college in the past is I have to explain accounting to non-accounting majors, right? So you got to keep it simple, right? That doesn't work any other way, right? You know, don't ignore emotion. Everybody buys on emotion, but justifies it rationally. And finally, and most importantly, get to the why. Get to the why. Connect to the why. So we've had a great, great opportunity to speak with Doug Fox. Doug's course, the instructor, will be an instructor in one of our courses coming up in the fall, which will be creating a brand that connects and converts. And Doug, we really appreciate your time today. And it's been really informative for me and for our listeners. And we look forward to hearing more from you in the very near future. Thank you, Doug.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Dave. Appreciate you having me.